they were to become casualties of war, wasn't it better to go out swinging rather than slaughtered like corralled beasts? Why don't we let them decide? Hayden was appeasing me. We both knew how that was going to go. I will talk to them, I announced as I stood. You want me to come with you? No, you stay, Cedar. Let me know if there's anything else I need to know. How goes the great powwow? Tallow materialized from the wall as I entered the camp. You learned that from Cedar? I asked you a question.
So did I. Do you want to play this game now?
Since when did you become so high and mighty? Please, Tallow, this isn't the time. But he was already walking away. If my heart didn't rupture before I made it to the distant sleeping area, I would consider that a win. If my head didn't explode, I would consider that a miracle. I hadn't been expecting nearly every living Distancian to be there. Tallow. It had to have been him. I would have to ask him, if we ever spoke again, how he could have possibly known to gather everyone. Oh, look, it's the ghost come to visit us mere mortals. Had to have been one of Tallow's friends who said that. What was worse, my lifelong friend turning against me, or feeling hostility from the people whose lives I was trying to protect? Both hurt. Deciding which cut deeper was an exercise in futility. Most looked at me expectantly, waiting for news. Any news. I had to remember that they knew very little about what was going on. They'd been thrust into a war, seen two-thirds of their clan slain, and then were fed, harbored, and tucked away just as quickly. "Hi, everyone," I started. "Lo, she speaks!" That got some great laughs from Tallow's friends, and some nervous chatter from the rest. I had to smile myself. Tallow just stared at me, a smug look about him that I just wanted to punch off of his face. Would his friends help him out then? "I've got some news," I continued. "Yeah, regurgitated to us like a mama bird to its babies. All right, that's enough," Tallow said, silencing his band of idiots. He wanted it to be known by all just who was in control here. Fine. I'd let him think that if it made him feel better. May I continue?
Please do. We can't wait to hear what you have to say.
Why was he being such a jerk?
The Comanche arrived today. Even as I speak, they are cementing their alliance with the Klondikes, which means, well, it appears we are all now in a three-way alliance.
Tell them what good it does us, Tallow shouted out, clearly sarcastic.
What does he mean?
How is it not a good thing?
Another in the group asked, clearly confused. The crowd began to murmur.
Distancians! Tallow believes that once the Comanches and Klondikes defeat the Brutons and Hylians, that they will turn on us.
It is not what I believe, but it is not without historical precedence.
How could we hope to stop them? They have our weapons. There are far too many. We wouldn't stand a chance. Should we run? Where would we go?
The questions were coming rapid-fire and non-stop. I let it continue for a minute. Then I raised my voice above the clatter.
I think we should fight.
That cut through the forest of words like a sharp knife.
Fight? They'll kill us.
Someone most certainly will if you don't fight back.
Hayden will tell you that you should stay here while the larger clans fight it out.
Isn't that a good thing?
Yeah, we'd be safe. I like Hayden. He cares about us.
Again, as a clan, they were all speaking their piece. Distancians, hear me. At best, this plan would provide a moment's security. When the battles are over, only one clan can stand. This has always been the way of the war, and as much as I wish it differently, I see now this essential fact will not likely change. What do you think any of the surviving clans will do when they come back in here, and you are all sitting here like sheep? Will they continue to house and protect us like guests?
There were some shocked expressions, and many were trying to hold back tears. Some could not.
Despite our victories and celebrations, our reality remained unchanged. There was war,
and there was death. There was no safe haven, no true respite, no way out, unless through fighting. Fighting people to the death fundamentally changes things in your head. You can no longer see the world as you once did. Some grew stronger, some grew weaker, some checked out altogether. But always, it affected change. It was one of the first things we had learned from Brody's lessons and the books we found. It seemed so long ago. "Do you really think we have a chance out there?" one of Tallow's friends became suddenly interested. "You have more of a chance out there than you do in here," I told them all. "Are you ordering us?" Tallow asked. "Would you listen?" "About as well as you have." "Then we put it to a vote, and stand together as a clan." I was proud of my people. Of the 67 left, only 5 said they wouldn't fight, Tallow among them. "Go get your weapons, and from now on carry them constantly. We rely on no one but ourselves." The group filed past as I waited for Tallow to get in a parting shot. "And what of you?" I asked. "Me? Oh, I plan on living."
"That's it, Tallow?
That's all you have for me?" Tears threatened, and I hated him for making me feel so vulnerable and alone, especially in front of his friends, who seemed to be eating it up. For a second, I thought he might soften. Maybe if we were alone, he would have. But his friends pressed him on, and he went with it. "What more do you want from me? I have given you all I can. While you get the rest of our clan killed, I'll be searching for a way to lasting peace." "Let's go," he told his friends. "Get out of my way, ghost," one of them muttered at me with disdain. I did cry. Once I knew for certain they were gone. The frustration of it. The hurt. It was too much. "I saw Dex and Juniper getting their weapons, so whatever you said must have worked." Cedar nearly slid into me as she came running up. "Whoa, hey, you all right?" she asked when she saw my face. She put her hands on my shoulders. "Tallow. It's Tallow, isn't it? I will beat him silly." And she meant it. "He hates me, Cedar, and I don't know why." "I don't think he hates you, though it is clear he's very angry. I think he's afraid of you, and he's lashing out." "What? That doesn't make any sense." "Sure it does. First, Brody tells him he's holding you back. So when we entered the war, I'm sure his man self hoped he'd have the chance to save you 6 times, and you would fall completely and madly in love with him. Then you go and become this superhero legend woman that he can't even hold a candle to, proving everything Brody said. Now here comes this great leader who is obviously smitten with you on every possible level, and sorry, but it looks like you're at least in lust with him, too. Anyway, you're partnering with him in a war Tallow's having even a lesser part in. He doesn't know who he is anymore, especially to you." "Thank you, Cedar. I think. I guess you have learned something from those books, although now I'm going to have to read them myself so I can follow what you're saying half the time." "I thought we had settled this." Hayden was looking at me crossly. "We did not settle anything. You said one thing should happen, and I disagree." "This makes no sense, Winter. What can such a small force possibly achieve?" "Maybe nothing, maybe everything. I will not have them sit in a corner waiting to be spoils for the victor." "I would have expected something like this from Tallow, not from you," Hayden stated, his voice rising. "I was having very little luck today with the men in my life. The Distancians are my responsibility, not yours, Hayden. I appreciate all you've done for us. We all do. But we are in this war, and it is their lives I need to consider. Please don't look at me that way," I pleaded. I thought the fighting was supposed to be the hardest part, but seeing Tallow and Hayden so angry with me was tearing me apart. "Don't get in my way." He stomped off furiously, nearly throwing everything I thought about him out the window. "Cedar, I don't feel right about any of this, and it feels like I've lost control.
Talo wants us all to leave, and Hayden wants us all to stay together. My instinct tells me neither of them is right, but I can't see a better option.
What are you saying? Cedar looked up at me from oiling down her blade.
Manot's coming here. That much we know. With Kinder and Hayden combined, it's about an even fight, but after all is said and done, all of them are going to want us dead.
We need to find a way to get out of this mess. Just not Talo's way.
Winter, I'm not taking Talo's side.
But he's right.
You aren't paying attention to what is right in front of you.
I've been watching close lately, and I'm surprised Hayden lets you go relieve yourself alone.
They aren't... No, I pushed her. They don't watch that closely. You are so gross.
Cedar laughed.
You just don't figure a ghost for having to go. It's fascinating, I guess.
Don't make me hurt you. The point remains, how do you expect to leave if you always have an escort? Cedar asked.
So you believe we are captives here?
They might be keeping an eye on me, but you don't have an escort, and neither do any of the others.
I hope you are not saying what I think you're saying. I will not leave this place, nor would I stay without you.
I thought you understood that.
And remember, you're the one that first brought up the part of them keeping an eye on us. I don't think I would have even thought of that on my own.
It's my life or the lives of the rest of the Distancians. Without someone to lead them out, they will be slaughtered by the first enemy they encounter, or starve to death.
There's no middle ground here, Cedar.
Those other 66 aren't my best friends, Winter. You can't ask this of me.
I already have.
Get Talo to do it. He's the one in a rush to leave.
He's not a leader, Cedar. You are.
Pah! She blew out a large breath of air.
Can I think on it tonight?
Tonight, but that's it.
If I let Cedar have her way, she'd debate about it until all options were forcibly removed by circumstances.
First, can we go back and check this cistern?
That again?
The glow was probably just minerals or something. It's not worth risking your life over, Cedar.
All the same, I'd probably have a clearer mind to make my decision if I knew what was down there for sure.
Are you forcing me?
I'd like to consider it more crafty manipulation rather than brute force.
Fine, let's go check it out.
I hadn't noticed who was following us that day, but they were stationed in the cavern hallway before we'd been in the sleeping chambers for more than a minute. I was getting better at moving through the crack, although I was no happier for it.
You ready?
Cedar asked, looking at me with trepidation.
For what? I'm not doing anything, and I don't think you should be either.
I've told you before, I can't swim. If you get into trouble about all I'm going to be able to do is yell loudly.
I'll take my chances.
She placed her hand on my shoulder before dropping into the water. She took in a large measure of air and then ducked under. I watched as some bubbles rose. After a moment, those stopped. I'd been holding my breath as well to get an idea of just how long I thought she could stay down there safely. My lungs began to burn, my chest pulling tight. The periphery of my vision was darkening. And still no Cedar.
Cedar!
I called, gulping in a blessed chunk of air. I carefully got into the water, making sure to avoid where Cedar had gone in, lest I inadvertently step on her. I plunged my head in and looked around wildly for her. The lantern above did a poor job of illuminating the water past a foot down. I felt around for any part of her I could grip and pull toward the surface. I was groping wildly, constantly jamming my fingers and slamming my hands and elbows into the rock. The bottom couldn't have been more than 5 feet down, but it was impossible. I couldn't find her.
Cedar, stop this. Where are you? This isn't funny.
When I realized I'd checked the small space at least 3 times and had sufficiently bloodied the water up from my futile efforts, I finally got up the nerve to poke around inside the damned hole.
Stupid, stupid, I admonished myself, and her.
Of course, the opening should have been the first place I checked, not the last. If she was stuck in there, she'd have drowned by now. Panic was welling up in me as I went back down and felt around. When I finally located the hole, I reached my hand in. At first, there was nothing. And then, with my outstretched fingers, I felt her hair. It did not register with me at that point why she would have entered feet first. All I knew was that I wanted to get my friend out of the water. I wrapped my hand around her hair and yanked as hard as I could toward me. When I was confident she was free of the hole, I pulled her upwards. It was then I noticed her hands had wrapped around my arm. "Ow, Winter, you're hurting me," she yelled. "Everything all right in there?" the guard asked from the entrance to our chambers. "Fine, fine," Cedar shouted. "Catfight," she yelled for his benefit. For mine, her voice dropped down and was laced with threat. "If you don't let go of my hair, I'm going to scratch your eyes out." I'm saving you," I told her. "You are hurting me." Unraveling my hand was not easy. A significant portion of her wet hair was tangled in and through my fingers. She danced on tiptoes, wincing and crying out as I tried to pull free. "That's my hair," she said sadly, as I dipped my hand in the water to get the offending strands off of me. "Are you all right?" I asked, her face quickly shifting from sadness to excitement. "You scared me. There's definitely something down there." "What is it?" "I couldn't really see it properly, Winter. I knew you were going to start freaking out soon, and I couldn't take the chance that you were going to get somebody. I know where the glow is coming from, though. There are lights down there. Hundreds of them."
"You mean like torches?"
"No, more like those lamps in the library. You know, the ones with the glass balls. Only these are on."
"Yeah, I know what you're talking about. I'm just having a hard time believing it. Did you maybe bonk your head on the cave wall and dream this up?"
I desperately wanted to discount her find. Something like that would mean rethinking my entire reality again, and it scared me to the core. She'd found something that was supposed to remain hidden, and I kind of wanted it to stay that way. Hidden, I mean.
"Come on, come and look for yourself."
"Cedar, I can't swim, and I hate ducking my head underwater."
"Winter."
She grabbed my face in her hands. "Listen to me. I found something important, and we've got to check it out. The hole is wider than the one leading into this chamber, and it's not more than 5 or 6 feet long. It opens up to a much larger pool. And then beyond that is the light."
"I'm scared, Cedar."
It was time to admit it.
"Winter is scared. I think I can safely say I've seen it all.
I'll lead the way. You just follow me and you'll be fine. You won't be under the water for more than 10 or 15 seconds.
"Okay?" she asked, when she realized I still hadn't come around to being comfortable with this.
"No?"
"Yeah. I'm good."
"Okay. Get some air. And let's go." She dropped down under the water. When I didn't immediately follow, she pulled on my leg. I grabbed a breath and plunged down after her. Cedar's entire body was through the hole before I even got to it. "Now or never," I thought, as I tried to calm my demons. I chose now, and stuck my head through. I didn't know whether to place my arms over my head or behind, but I needn't have worried, as there was plenty of space to move them about. I'd like to say I was swimming, but it was more like flailing. I couldn't completely extend my arms, but I did have great range of motion. Once I knew I could move, I kicked with my feet and propelled myself forward. I was not moving nearly as fast as I wanted to be. I was grateful when Cedar reached down and grabbed my hair, even if it was only for a little payback. "That does hurt," I said, rubbing my head when I came up.
"You think?"
"Whoa," I said, as I finally looked around. "What is this place?"
"What did I tell you?" She was wading toward the shore. "Isn't this in any of your books?"
"Not unless it's a secret retreat for Jean-Paul and Heloise, which I seriously doubt."
"Who?"
"Forget it. How are these lights working?"
"Electricity, I think."
I had no idea what electricity was, and it was likely she knew nothing more about it other than to call it that. Whatever it was, it seemed like magic.
It was light that didn't depend on the sun or flame. To call the room vast was an understatement. From where we stood, I couldn't see the other side. Cedar was smiling next to me. "You look guilty of something." "I've got an idea," she told me. "Am I going to like this?" "What if we bring our people here?" she asked. I immediately tried to think of all the ways that wouldn't work, but I realized it just might. They weren't being watched, so all I needed to do was lead the guards away, and Cedar could bring the Distantians here, maybe in ones or twos, so as not to gather any attention. I told Cedar all this, and she agreed. Suddenly I remembered Tala. I knew I had to share this with him, but he had been so combative. What if he reacted negatively? "When I get everyone through, you just need to follow." Cedar interrupted my thoughts. I shook my head. "That won't work." "What do you mean it won't work?" "Once they come in and realize I'm not in the chamber, they'll start looking for alternate ways out. They'll find this hole for sure." "Then we'll just post guards on this side." "And then what, Cedar? Are we going to continually kill people as they come through? It'll get pretty gross in here pretty fast. If all the Distantians disappear, they won't have a reason to look in here. They'll just assume they've left with Talos' group." "I've told you, Winter, I'm not leaving you. You've found a way to keep our clan safe. You can't turn your back on them now." "Fine. I'll get them through and then I'll come back for you." "Talo needs to be in on this. You think leaving him in charge is such a good idea?" I thought she was going to stomp her foot in frustration. "Damn it, Winter, you can't do this to me. You can't put me in this position." "Wait, this might not even work." "What do you mean?" she asked. "Well, first, we know nothing about this place. What if this isn't the only entrance? What if we are not alone here? And how long can we hide in here without food? Even if everyone sneaks some through with them, it will be wet, and at most we'd only have a couple of days' worth." I was trying to figure out a way to make this work when Cedar smacked me on the arm. "Come on, we at least have to check it out," she entreated. "I think we should wait for tonight. If someone comes looking for us now, they're going to get pretty suspicious when we don't answer." I thought I was going to have to drag her by her hair again to get her away. She was reluctant, but we finally swam back. Chapter 19. Into the Past. Menot's advance party had been spotted, and the cavern was bustling as people prepared. Hayden and Tallow both avoided me, which was fine with me. I was so distracted by what could potentially be in that hidden room that even an arrogant, pig-headed man would be able to see I wasn't seeking attention from them. Hayden had me and Cedar brought to the War Council for final preparations. Nothing much had changed, other than he wanted the Distantians to be in the center so they were protected on all sides. Protected. Guarded. It was all just words. All I could think about was that we might have a real way to get them out of this, and at the edge of that hope was a glimmer that maybe we'd found the evidence that Brody knew had to be out there. "We don't have much time," I needlessly told Cedar when we pretended to go to bed that night. It was a little earlier than usual, but since it was possible we might not be able to get a good night's sleep for many days, nobody thought twice about it. "If the room works out, then we're going to have to get everyone through before midday." Cedar was figuring out the logistics. "If the room works out," I echoed. Cedar was too anxious to wait much longer. I could hear her tapping her fingers and sighing endlessly. But we had to delay. I wanted our guard to think we'd had enough time to fall asleep, so he would relax. Cedar couldn't stand it. She was already halfway through to the cistern. I quickly followed. It wasn't 5 minutes later we once again found ourselves back in the giant, lighted room. I had worried that when we went through this time the lights would be out, but it was a needless concern. As we waded out of the water and onto a platform, the true enormity of the place struck me. There were large trucks parked over to the left. "There's another way out," Cedar said, as she pointed to the big green machines. I almost asked how she could possibly know that, and then I realized that those trucks hadn't come in the same way we had. Cedar started running to a point down past the trucks.
"What are you doing?"
I called out softly. I didn't want to shout because I wasn't entirely convinced we were alone, although the floor told a different story. There was a heavy coating of dust, and in some places, chunks of rock had dislodged from the ceiling and smashed onto the ground. As orderly as everything else seemed here, I couldn't imagine that if the area was in use, whoever it belonged to would have left the debris in place. Unless, of course, they wanted to make it look deserted. My paranoia was kicking up.
"It's a plane!"
Cedar was jumping up and down as she ran her hand alongside the body of a machine I'd never heard of or seen before.
This machine can fly.
There's such a thing? It had wings like a bird, but it was much, much bigger than any bird I'd ever seen. The wings didn't look like they could flap. People used to fly in these things, Winter. She was climbing up a small staircase that led to a see-through shell on the top of the contraption.
"Don't touch anything!"
I was afraid it was going to start flying around on its own. She pressed her face up against the shell. "I can fly this."
"It doesn't fly itself?"
I joined her on the top of the staircase. I was looking at an incredible amount of levers, pedals, dials, and a myriad of other mechanical-looking things I didn't even have names for.
"You think you can fly this?" I asked incredulously.
"Well, I'd have to do a little more reading," she admitted. We stepped down and discovered there were more planes, and a machine that we didn't have a name for. It had something that looked like large sword blades attached to the top of it. There was also a seat in it for a person. The dials and levers were plentiful in this one as well.
"I think this flies too," I told Cedar.
"How?"
"I don't know. How do you think that plane flies?"
We both looked over at it. When we'd had our fill of the machines, we moved over to the far corner, where a part had been sectioned off in small rooms. At first, we both thought they were sleeping quarters, but when we checked them out, only one had something that could be construed as anything to lay down on. Rats and time had made even that an impossibility.
"Who do you think General Jinsen is?" Cedar asked, as she brushed dirt and dust off a small nameplate attached to the door.
I shrugged my shoulders. I went over to the next quarters, but all I could see on the plate was Colonel T. The rest of the letters were coated in heavy grime. I didn't see the point in finding out whose place it was. I was completely convinced that the people who had resided here were long gone. I went in the room. Inside were remnants of what appeared to be a stuffed alligator on the floor, along with a bottle of liquid called Moxie. I picked up the bottle and saw that it was still full. It fizzed when I twisted the lid off, but the sour odor it emitted was the only clue I needed to realize that whatever was in there was not fit for human consumption.
"Oh,"
I said as I dropped the bottle on the ground. Cedar came in and picked something up off the desk.
"What's Germex?"
she asked, sniffing at a bottle. She made nearly the same face I had.
"Come on, there's nothing in here. Let's see if we can find some food, or the other way out."
Cedar grabbed my arm. It was the lights that kept niggling at the back of my mind. There hadn't been a person in this place for years, decades maybe, possibly even centuries. Yet they glowed. Nothing I'd ever known my entire life could keep working that long. For now I was going to have to be content that they were just on. Better than off, I suppose.
"What do we have here?"
Cedar had led me to another area. "Meals ready to eat. In a box." We were both staring at tall stacks of boxes.
"Might as well see."
Cedar jumped up and pulled a box off the top. It split open as it made contact with the ground. I picked up a green, bloated-looking packet that had fallen out. I tore into the top of it with my teeth. That was a mistake. If I thought the Moxie had smelled bad, this had Cedar gagging, and she was 3 feet away. I couldn't toss the thing far enough away from me. the smell seemingly seared into my nostrils.
"You gonna open another one?" Cedar had turned away.
"I thought we were friends. Maybe that's what people ate back then," she finally turned back to me.
"Yeah, and maybe that's why they're not around anymore."
"Good point. Probably you shouldn't mess with this stuff, then."
"Nothing gets past you, Cedar."
"I think it moved." Cedar was looking over the contents that had once been considered food. "What a waste. This looks like enough food for all of us for a long while.
Just gonna have to find a way out."
"What do we do then? We can't go back to distance, even if we knew where it was."
"One problem at a time, Winter. Why so glum?"
She was moving toward some heavy wooden crates. "This place just makes me anxious."
"What do you think M-16s are?" Cedar asked, as she brushed away dust from the top.
"I hope it's not more food."
Cedar stepped back like I'd yelled snake.
"No, it can't be.
Right?
Open it and find out."
"I did the last one," I said, before she could back out.
"It's shut too tight."
She was straining as she pulled on the lip of it. She stopped to suck the tips of her now sore fingers.
"That's too bad. I can't get it open."
"You don't sound all that sincere."
"Come on, there's other stuff to check out. We can deal with this later."
"Chicken. I'd love some." She was smiling. And she was right. There was more to take in here than we possibly could in the amount of time we had. There was another large room with easily the biggest table I'd ever seen in my life. At the front of the room was a large, black, flat surface. It had to have been some sort of glass, as it had a crack that radiated out from the bottom left-hand corner.
"This looks like a war room," Cedar noted.
I had to agree.
"It's always about war. What is wrong with man?
Maybe it would be better if a woman ran things."
"Maybe you," she nudged me. "I'd rather eat those meals ready to eat."
We walked around the place for hours, finding a lot of stuff that was only of use to an era long gone by. I was just about to tell Cedar I thought it was time to head back when I came across a darkened corridor.
"Hey, this might be something,"
I shouted out to Cedar, who had walked back to the M-16 crates. She had a piece of metal she was going to use as a pry bar.
"What is it?"
"I don't know. It's dark."
"Oh, I saw that a while ago. Why didn't you say something?"
"It was dark. I couldn't see anything." The light only penetrated so far, and the blackness slid away for seemingly eternity.
"Cedar, this is wide enough to fit trucks."
"So?
Oh.
Well, go check it out."
I don't know why I was so terrified of that passage. In my mind, the stuff of nightmares was waiting down that hall. I got goosebumps, thinking that something big, mean, and malevolent was staring at me, waiting. Just far enough that it was hidden, yet I was bathed in light. I wish I'd brought my sword.
Yeah, you might not need it.
Why?
I gladly stepped back from the corridor to see what she'd found. Cedar was holding a wicked-looking rifle.
"I've found out what an M-16 is.
Do you think it has bullets?"
"How would I know?
But in case it does, you shouldn't be pointing it in my direction." It looked suspiciously like the weapons the soldiers I had encountered by the fire had been carrying.
"Oh, yeah, right. I'm going to look for bullets."
I'm going back to the corridor, summon all my courage, and face that darkness.
"Okay."
Cedar hadn't heard a word I'd said, too preoccupied with her latest find. I kept close to the wall on my right, trailing my hand along the rough surface. This, in theory, would make defending this location easier. I kept telling myself, looking for a positive aspect to what I was doing. It wasn't more than 10 paces before I was swallowed whole by the blackness. I took a couple of deep breaths, closed my eyes, and prayed that I would get to some semblance of night vision. Funny thing about pitch-black darkness, there's really no light to adjust to. I kept moving farther down the length of it. Every once in a while, I would take a look back to remind myself what light looked like. I almost lost the heart to go on when I looked behind me, startled that the light had faded, and now,
perspective-wise, was not much bigger than my fist. It was like climbing a tower and not looking down until you were on the top rung. This is stupid. There's nothing down here. Of course, that was when my foot clattered against something. I just about got tangled up in whatever it was. At that point, my mind was made up. I was turning around. But I knew I wouldn't. This had to be done. Yeah, but with a lantern. And a sword, my inner voice chimed in. I kept moving. It was difficult to keep calling what was behind me light. As it had become so dim now, it was more the remembrance of it. I began to imagine that this must be what death was like, which was certainly helpful. I nearly lost it. Was that what had actually happened to me? Had I suffered some grievous wound? Who knows, maybe my first day? I've dreamt everything up until now, and my body was living out its final moments in this fantastical made-up world. Was it possible I lived in the time of Cedar's books, and I'd made up this elaborate fantasy? The war, Tallow, the library, as a way to protect my fragile mind as I traveled through a gateway from life to death? And now was I to be relegated to the dark for all eternity? I realized I'd been holding my breath. I laughed at my own irrational fear. "Okay, Winter," I said, "if you're dead, then why is your heart pounding so fast? Why are the tips of your fingers sore where they scraped against this very solid wall?" I shook my head and returned to my reality, which actually was a precarious one. If not for those sore fingers, I would have lost all sense of direction. I'd previously thought traveling through the short crevice to get to the cistern was bad. This crushed that. When I first began to see outlines of objects ahead of me, I thought it was merely my mind creating images so that I would not sink permanently into insanity from the lack of light. Had I somehow got turned around and was even now heading back to Cedar? It was possible I'd done one huge loop. For what purpose, I couldn't tell. If I'd gone through all of this just to make a circle, I was going to be very disappointed, and if I hadn't, I was going to have to summon the courage to go back. Funny how neither outcome really appealed to me. I kept moving forward, because there was no better option but to see this through to the end, kind of like everything else in my life. There was never a safe place to watch what happened from the sideline. The sliver of light I saw turned into a slice. The footing got more precarious as I moved closer. There were many somethings on the floor that tinkled as I inadvertently kicked them away. Then they became so numerous that I had a hard time not stepping on them. I stepped down to pick one up. It was cool to the touch and felt metallic. It was a couple of inches tall and pretty slender. When I was fairly certain I was going to turn an ankle, the corridor mercifully stopped. I was now standing next to a gigantic door that had been caved inward, as if the hammer of a god had slammed into the face of it. Moonlight bathed my face. I'd found a way out. I smiled and allowed myself to breathe freely. The doors rose above me by nearly the same height as tall trees. They'd been closed when whatever had assaulted them had hit. The metal curled up enough at the bottom to let two men walk abreast. I didn't want to imagine what could have caused that damage. The weapons we had were already more than capable of tearing flesh apart. What more power could one need? A slight breeze swept over my body as I walked far enough away from the opening to look around. I was free. I knew it. I could feel it through my very soul. I'd like to say that it was an easy decision to turn back around. It wasn't. My entire life had been dictated to me by others, by their demands, the demands I made on their behalf. Now, here I was on the precipice of doing what I wanted, when I wanted, how I wanted, without thought for anyone else. The sheer magnitude of that thought threatened to make me giddy. I could have gone running into the night with my hands over my head, shrieking in delight, and never once had a thought about what I'd left behind. Even I knew that for the lie it was. Guilt would find me. That's what it does. It would creep up on me in the middle of the night and pounce like a bear, tearing my essence to bloody shreds. I had to go back for Cedar, for the rest of the Distancians, for Tallow. And what of Hayden? Would he embrace this potential new world, or would he fight to the end to conquer it? For some, the fear of the unknown would cripple them from exploring ever deeper. They would remain content to be who they are and where they are, weighing the risks against finding new places and growing internally, then settling for the safety of sameness. All of these thoughts raced through my mind as I stood out there. When I heard a distant growl, it was then I remembered I was outside and had not so much as a big stick to defend myself with. Time to go back. My shoulders sagged as my head dipped down. I'd rather talk to Tallow and Hayden at the same time than go back down that long corridor, but I knew Cedar waited at the other end. I stayed on the same side I'd traveled down. At least that way I could rub my other hand raw. I'd not gone more than 10 yards when a blinding flash burned into my optic nerves, followed by a loud clicking and flickering of lights. I shielded my eyes and instinctively hit the ground as the entire corridor became brightly lit as if it were midday. I squinted as I adjusted to the glow. When I was fully able to open my eyes, I leapt to my feet, wishing it had remained dark. Bodies, well, skeletons of bodies, littered the entire corridor from one side to the other. How I was able to avoid them was a mystery. The tinkling sounds I'd heard was from the thousands of bullet casings scattered everywhere. This had been someone's last stand. Broken soldiers lay twisted where they had died, some in agony, their jaws fixed open in silent screams. For all the wonders light could illuminate, it could also put a direct beam on everything that was wrong in the world.
"Winter!"
I knew Cedar was shouting. But from however far away she was, her voice was just barely making it. I nimbly made my way past the field of death and started running back the way I'd come. Cedar waved when we were finally in sight of each other. I kept running.
"You all right?" she asked when I got to her. "I found it. I found the way out," I said breathlessly.
And
what?"
"There's more you're not telling me, Winter. You never were a good liar."
"I'm not lying. I found the way out."
"Okay, we've established that. Now tell me what you're not telling me."
"Just death, Cedar.
There's just more death at the end of this corridor. It happened a long time ago, but the stain of it is still heavy."
"I'm sorry, Winter."
Her warm embrace felt so comforting after I'd allowed myself to imagine that I might have crossed over.
"I can't believe you found the way. Where do you think it goes?"
"It's past the pickets. Don't ask me how I know, I just felt it. A slight tingle, but not anything like it had been that first time. I didn't think it was enough to activate the marker. No real proof. Just something I felt."
"Past the pickets?" Cedar said almost reverently. "We'll be free."
I didn't say anything as I let her sift through all the levels of thought that I had. "But not really," she said, as she looked up in anguish. "But not really. We needed to get not only the distance war survivors out, but also the rest of the inhabitants from our town, including Brody. Then we had to figure out what was going on here. We could certainly see freedom, maybe even taste a small corner of it, but we couldn't dive in as much as we would have loved to. We were bound to a cause that precluded it." We started to walk back the way we'd come.
"How'd you get the lights on?"
Cedar smiled. "You were gone a really long time. I mean, enough time that I was able to figure out how to load this thing," she said, holding up her rifle. I scared myself nearly to death when I fired off two rounds. The first hit the ceiling above my head and then slammed into the ground not a foot away. She lowered her voice. Almas died. The words came out in a whisper, as if she didn't want the Lord of Death to realize just how close he had come to capturing another prize. The second shot went more or less where I wanted it to. She didn't elaborate, but at least it wasn't a near-death experience. Then I started looking around. I'd made these two explosions, and you didn't come running, so I figured something had either happened to you or you were just that far away. I didn't hear anything. The last place I remembered you being was that dark patch, so I figured I'd follow. I put my hand against the wall, felt something different, colder. When I jerked my hand away, I must have hit it right because the lights came on. I wanted to smack myself. I'd felt the cold thing, too, but I'd pulled my hand away too quickly. I could have had the lights on the entire journey, though maybe it had been better that way. I may not have even continued had I known I was traversing a mass grave. There were still smatterings of the dead along the rest of the way back. At first we pointed them out to each other. They appeared to have been crawling back away from the larger doorway. Then, as if by some silent gesture, we both ignored them, whether from respect or something more personal. Death was inevitable, but that didn't mean we wanted to be reminded of it. By the time we reached the entrance to the passageway, I was exhausted in every way imaginable, physically, mentally, and spiritually, and certainly no closer to a solution to our immediate problems. "Should I switch the lights out?" Cedar asked as we moved past the switch. My first inclination was to say no. Let those who had for so long been in the dark have the light. Then I rethought my stance. What could they possibly see but more death? And the light. There was no telling how visible it would be from the outside. Just because we would be past the pickets didn't necessarily mean we'd be free from danger. Neither of us had the slightest notion what was out there. The soldiers that died here had been outside the reach of the war, and very likely far from distance. My father had come from somewhere beyond them as well. If I'd learned anything in my 17 years, it was that wherever there were people, there was trouble. I reached past Cedar's poised hand and moved the lever down. As the lights went out, a chill rippled down my spine. How many guns are there? More than all 67 of us could carry. How many bullets? Same answer. Winter, we could win this war with all this. To what purpose, Cedar? Do you want to kill hundreds? Thousands, even? I don't. I'm just saying, if our goal is to end the war, she said, slightly downtrodden. I'm sorry, I didn't mean it that way. We need to rethink all of it, Cedar. At the end of this access strip are hundreds of corpses. Men and women who had lives all obliterated by something much like what you're holding. Think about it. Do you think Menot would hesitate to use these guns on the Comanchekees? What if Hayden had these weapons? Do you think a single Hylian would be alive today? It's too much. I don't know why anyone would create something to slaughter indiscriminately, yet they did. It's a tool, Winter. It kills like that piece of sharpened steel you're normally wearing. It's how and why you use it that is important. This could be what changes everything. I didn't say anything. I was fairly confident that what she was holding had one purpose only, and that was what had gotten us into this situation in the first place. Think I can bring this back with us? Not yet. I'm pretty sure people would ask where you got it. We have to think carefully about how, when, and with whom we share this with. What about Serot? I asked, just as we were about to go back. It's true, I have feelings for him, and I do trust him. That's part of the reason I'd rather we stayed and fought. It might be worth it if I could save him. What about Hayden? Do you love him? Love Hayden. I barely knew him. There was something there, but the arrogance and insistence with which he had ordered me around the day before had put me on my guard. Cedar, on the other hand, had a fairly simple relationship with a man of loyalty and depth, from what I could see. I hadn't thought about it, but if we succeeded in getting our people out, in all likelihood she would never see Sarah again. I wavered. Our discovery was so recent I hadn't had an opportunity to think it completely through. It would be another loss in a world full of them. "Maybe we can come back and get them," I told her. That was a pretty big stretch, and we both knew it. First, they had to survive the upcoming battle. We were both going to abandon people we cared for, people who were depending on us to fight with them, as we had promised. Cedar would be leaving Sarah, but I would be leaving Tallow and her, two people I had not been separated from for almost 10 years. I was not going to make it back. I knew it in my heart. Tonight I'd been offered the only true freedom I'd ever had in my life, and I'd turned away from it. Once I joined in that battle tomorrow, my fate was sealed. Cedar placed her new rifle down on the side of the small pool. Taking with us what solace we could, we headed back. Back to war. And back in time, it seemed. When I came up on the other side, Cedar wrapped her hand over my mouth. I pulled away and was about to yell at her when I heard Hayden.
"Winter! Cedar! Are you two okay? I'm coming through!"
"No, no, wait!" I shouted entirely too loudly. "We're, not decent." "Yeah, not decent," Cedar echoed, shrugging her shoulders when I looked over at her.
"I was worried. I've been calling for a little bit."
"Sleeping," I tried to yawn out the answer. Cedar grabbed her nose to tell me how much my lies stunk.
Okay. When you get dressed, can you come see me, please?"
He sounded relieved, but also a touch suspicious. "Okay. Bye." Cedar didn't speak until we were sure he was gone. "What do you think?"
"I don't think he thinks we were asleep, if that's what you're asking. He might be suspicious of something, but he certainly can't know what we were truly doing."
I changed my clothing and quickly sought out Hayden, so he wouldn't have too much time to think about what we may or may not have been doing.
"How are you?" he asked when I got to his sleeping area.
"I get asked that a lot. Do I look bad?"
"You look tired. I'm sorry I awoke you from your sleep." He was looking at me. My heart was beating fast in my chest. Was it from the attraction I felt for him, or the secret I was trying to keep from him? Cedar was right. I was a terrible liar. It was more of a nap, I suppose. The water is so comforting. People who fall asleep in the water generally drown. I had Cedar there. She was sleeping, too, remember? I knew I wasn't fooling him. If he got on the right track of questions, I was doomed to reveal everything. "You came to call. I assume it wasn't to check on mine and Cedar's sleeping habits."
"Right. Sorry. It's about the battle tomorrow. I'm concerned for you, Winter. I wish you and your people would just sit this one out. We've been through this, Hayden." I was about as adept at hiding anger as I was secrets. "I will not sit by while the Titans clash and determine our fate for us." He sighed. "I know you see us as eventual adversaries, but I want so much more than that, Winter. This doesn't have to end badly." "I want to believe you. I do. I just don't know how that can be. There are certain rules to this war that I'm sure you know better than I. How can what you suggest ever come to pass? Even if your clan absorbs us amicably, distance will send a whole new army of fresh recruits in a year, and the cycle will begin again."
"I don't know. I don't."
He came up close to me. When he reached out to hug me, I thought I was going to melt into his arms. The smell of him was intoxicating as I breathed him in. I laid my head against his chest. "All I know is what I feel. And this feels so right. I'll fight anybody who tries to take this away from me." We stayed like that for a good long while, I think I may have even taken that nap I'd alluded to earlier. When he moved me slightly away so he could look at me, it was like a dream. I reached up and touched his face. "Don't ever hurt me," I told him. "Never. Stay safe tomorrow, or I will hunt down Death himself to seek vengeance." We hugged again. He pulled me in so close that I never wanted to leave. I allowed myself to float so far from my present troubles that I didn't remember getting back to my quarters. Either I'd fallen asleep and he'd carried me back, or I'd moved on my own, in a dream state. Either way, I ended up next to Cedar. I felt somewhat rested when the call to arms came that following morning. "You all set?" I asked Cedar as I dressed and put on some of the leather armament Hayden had supplied. "I am, but I have the easy part. Are you all set?" "I hope so. You stay safe, Winter. I've loved you, I guess, like a sister would for all these years. I will miss you like no other." She hugged me briefly, but fiercely, before letting go to wipe her eyes. "I will miss you as well, Cedar. Trust that if there is any possibility I can get away undetected, I will follow you." It was a long shot, of course, and we both knew it. But it offered some comfort, and right now that was all either of us wanted. We were just parting as we entered the great room. "Hayden wants to see you," one of our guards told us. He didn't say anything as Cedar peeled off. I entered the room. Sarah was looking past me for Cedar. "She's getting the Distancians organized," I told him. He nodded curtly. Hayden spoke. "Our long-range scouts have reported seeing Menot's army not more than 10 miles from here. They will be upon us before the morning is over. Kinder, the Comanche Keys are ready." His face looked stern, discontented. Not, I believed, because we were about to go to battle, but because of the way we were going. It was sitting heavily with him. "2 hours is not much time, so let's not delay. We've already discovered and dispatched 4 of Menot's scout parties. At some point, one will get through and figure out what our strategy looks like. I don't want that to happen until we are ready for it." I shuddered when Hayden said dispatched. It was so callous, as if he wasn't saying 4 men had just been put to death. When Hayden and I got to the mouth of the cavern, he looked upon what was to become most likely the bloodiest battlefield the war had ever seen. "Where are your people?"
"I've had a change of heart."
"What?"
"The vote was close, and Cedar talked me out of having them fight. You seemed so intent on it last night. Cedar felt so strongly, and she's always been a voice of reason for me. She was right. They're not fighters. They're people with weapons in their hands waiting to die. There is something more you're not telling me. This is too much of a change, too quickly. When this day is through, you are going to tell me everything." I didn't trust myself to speak, so I simply nodded quickly. Hayden moved away to begin ordering his men into their positions.
"Winter, we need to talk before this battle happens," Tallow said at my shoulder.
"Go find Cedar," I told him, without even glancing his way. I could not dare to look at him. Last night with Hayden seemed like too much of a betrayal. The guilt would be right there for him to see. I did see Cedar. She had some fantastical story about getting us out of here. When I asked about you, she clammed up, so I figured I'd find you in the thick of things. If what she says is true, why are you not leaving?
I can't.
Is it because of him? He asked, pointing his sword toward Hayden's retreating form.
Tallow, go. Go with Cedar, please. I cannot bear the thought of anything happening to you.
I will not leave you here, Winter. I cannot.
Every promise I have ever spoken to you is as true now as it ever was. How do you think I would feel if that which you were trying to protect me from befell you?
Forgive me if I seem doubtful, Tallow, but you must admit you have given me cause. Lately you've been acting as if you didn't care about me. Sometimes you look upon me as though you hate the sight of me. Why would you be so concerned for my welfare now? I thought he was about to storm off again. But he stayed. For a moment, I saw those perfect blue eyes that only a year ago had